Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to The Love Code. I'm so glad you're joining me today because, as always, I have such inspiring information and an uplifting guest that will be sharing some profound experiences. As you know, this show is all about uplifting consciousness. It's to support you in your healing journey. It's to open your heart, open your mind, and let us all reconnect to the power that we have to change, heal, and transform our lives. And I am thrilled that you will be joining me for another wonderful experience of really reconnecting once again to who we truly are. That's the source of healing, and that's really the purpose of the Love Code. So we're just going to jump right in, and I want to introduce my guest to you. His name is Teo Alfaro, and he was born and raised in Argentina. Teo came to California in 1999, and his passion for reaching out to young people in need of mentoring and guidance, combined with his unique understanding of the subtle yet powerful teaching of wolves, inspired the creation of Wolf Connection, a sanctuary for wolves and wolf dogs north of Los Angeles. A thought leader and sought-after spiritual guide and advisor to influencers in the areas of science, technology, human potential, business, sports, and entertainment, he is an experienced TEDx speaker and now author of his first book, The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Teo to the show today. Hello, Teo.
Hi, Cheryl. What a lovely introduction. Thank you.
Well, you are such an inspiring man, and what a journey. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by how people arrive at their service to humanity and their purpose in life. So that's how I'd like us to begin our conversation today, Teo. Tell us about the journey that you took that has allowed you to live with this amazing experience of wolves and to create this unique sanctuary and understanding. And particularly, we're going to delve into what wolves can really teach us about being human, because there's a profound message here for all of us. So let's start there. Who are you? How did your journey unfold?
Well, thank you for that. That's a broad question. So I can go in a few different directions. I grew up in Argentina, as you said. From early age, from my teen years, I was always curious about the spiritual journey, which sounds more romantic than it actually was. And so I was reading, you know, different Eastern tradition and Celtic culture and so on, and eventually came across the writings of an author and anthropologist by the name of Carlos Castaneda, and his teachings touched me and moved me and to the point that I decided to migrate and come to the States and to Los Angeles specifically, looking for him. So eventually I became an apprentice and a student, and that was 20 years ago. And over time, I began applying all of those teachings in practical ways. And Wolf Connection has been the result of that. So now why wolves? The wolves appear in my life more in an energetic way, and then I was able to do the research and find a more intellectual explanation of what was that. But initially, it all felt very fortuitous. So, long story short, I was already working with teens and young adults in different capacities as a mentor and as a teacher, and I was looking for a more powerful way to engage them. Particularly when you work with young people that have gone through abuse and neglect and abandonment, the trauma is intense and they are typically emotionally closed down and rightfully so. So I was looking for a therapeutic method that would help them open up and trust a new possibility. I didn't know what that would look like. And eventually parallel to that, seemingly unrelated, I came across a little 6-week-old wolf dog puppy that needed help, that needed rescuing. And reluctantly, I didn't want her initially. Reluctantly, I took her in. So that puppy changed my life. Remember the first day when I received her, I had it also. I was fostering her for a couple of days, and she was 6 weeks old, so she was not potty trained or anything. So I locked her up in the kitchen during the night to prevent her from peeing around the house. And around 1 o'clock in the morning, she began howling. And that howl awakened something ancient in me. I mean, it really touched my heart, really opened me up. And the rest is history, as they say. That wolf dog became, the animal love of my life. We became inseparable. And very silently, very lovingly guided me to find more animals and eventually start a rescue that I never thought I was going to, it was going to be part of my life.
Wow.
Until then, I thought I was helping, rescuing wolves and giving them a sanctuary, and with my other hand, I was helping youth, until I brought them together. I invited some teenagers that I was working with at the time to come and meet the wolves. I didn't have a curriculum or a method. I just allowed for an encounter. And I began witnessing miracles. I began witnessing these kids that were not responding to any therapeutic methodology to open up naturally and trust and share and laugh and heal and let go of trauma. So then I realized that with a little bit of development, I could create something of value. So I began developing a methodology and some simple lessons that I could transmit and ways to facilitate these interactions between young people and wolves. So you say, well, why wolves? And, you know, after witnessing the miracles, I went on to do some research and trying to find some explanations that I could transmit to funders and government organizations and people that could help the project. And so I discovered that science is beginning to suggest what indigenous cultures have been talking about and have been reflecting in their legends for perhaps millennia, which is the wolf is the first animal we've ever associated with. The wolf is our first animal relation in our evolutionary journey. So it seems like we've been literally running with wolves for perhaps hundreds of thousands of years. The evidence, the archaeological evidence keeps suggesting, you know, longer and longer time period. So some biologists believe that at this point we have a DNA and genetic memory of this connection with canines. And what I have theorized is that when you put people in need of emotional healing with the wolves, this ancient ancestral memory, primal memory, gets activated and then allows for factory reset, if you will, that is beneath all the socialized learned behavior. So all this, the hurt and pain and resentment and closeness subsides for a moment and allows for something new to come in.
Wow, that's so profound. You know, Tara, can we go back just a little bit to your time with Carlo Castaneda's, because and probably even further, because obviously you had an awakening early in your life that led you on to your spiritual path. Am I correct in assuming that when you were still in Argentina as a child?
I had, that's a good catch. I had, now reviewing my life as an adult, I find certain breadcrumbs that were there. I mean, at the time, I did not consider it a sign of anything. I remember as a child having spontaneous lucid dreaming experiences that most children have. And then, of course, you know, the speed and momentum of modern lifestyles, you know, helps us forget those experiences. But I remember having some of those. I remember you talked earlier about the connection with nature. You know, we were chatting offline, and I remember having certain deep embodiment, you know, connections with certain, you know, just a tree or nature in general. So I never put it all together, you know, and I was just curious about what else is out there. And I was brought up Catholic, and I was in the military, and I mean, in the midst of all this, an undercurrent was taking place, and it wasn't until my 20s that I really got into, you know, a little bit more serious, and I began trusting this call that was. That didn't have a voice, that didn't have a name, but continued pulling me in a certain direction.
And then you had this encounter. I mean, it's more than an encounter. I mean, then you apprenticed with Carlos Castaneda. Can you tell us a little bit more how that occurred?
Well, yeah, I clarified on that. I mean, I came searching for him. He lived in L.A., and by the time I arrived looking for him, he had just passed away a few months earlier. So really my training wasn't with him. My training was with one of his colleagues, a woman by the name of Carol Tiggs, that remains my teacher to this day, and with some of Carlos's longtime apprentices. So, you know, in 1999 and 2000, I became an apprentice and a student of Carlos Castaneda's relations. How was that? Initially, again, some of these, I find that these energetic teachings, they creep in ways that we cannot consciously grasp. You know, so at a consciousness level, at an everyday consciousness level, there is some practices, and you sit in silence, and you do some movements, and you eat in a specific way, and you do some practices to awaken the lucid dreaming or conscious dreaming, that which all is all nice and dandy. And there is, at least in my experience over the years, I began realizing that it was a pledge that took place at an unconscious level to dedicate my life to consciousness. And it wasn't until, you know, recently, a few years back, that I became aware of that pledge. And that pledge was something that took place at an energetic level that I wasn't aware of it for years.
You know, it's such an interesting journey as we go through life, understanding as we become more awake, more aware, more connected, that we all have a very specific purpose, destiny, or another way to say it, a way to serve humanity. And it's the journey, you know, as we go through our journey in life, as convoluted as it may be, but it's to arrive at that place at some point in time where we are able to really fulfill the greater purpose for why we are here in this body on this planet.
I fully agree, and I'd like to, you know, invite that even a step further, which is there is a point in our journey that there is a merging with a higher purpose that stops being our own. I'm not living Tao's purpose anymore. I'm living the wolf's purpose, and I'm living a purpose that is cosmic in a way. I mean, of course, it's been manifested through this, you know, thing, configuration we call Tao at this time and space. But it's a little bit of a trap at a certain stage to go to, you know, into my journey and my vision and my purpose and my, because that's still a reflection of me.
So do you think that your purpose now is to help channel the consciousness through of the wolf into back into humanity? I mean, I guess I've answered my own question, really, because that does seem to be your purpose, taking this ancient connection that we have severed, as we've severed in all ways, really, in our Western culture, our 21st century world. We've profoundly severed our connection from the wisdom that comes from the animals, the plants, the stars, everything that is part of this greater whole that we exist within. We've severed it. We live in this artificial world. So the wolf is so much a path for you and a powerful one. So first of all, when you talk about wolf dogs, I would imagine for people listening, it's a wolf that's been bred with another species, another variety of the dog, right? Go ahead.
Well, just to give your listeners a bit of context, because the conversation goes more and more esoteric. So to give your listeners some context, I run an organization called Wolf Connection. That is, we have a couple of hundred acres just north of Los Angeles. We have 35, 40 wolves currently as a permanent residence on the land. And these animals are rescues from all over the country, from illegal ownership or situations of abuse, neglect, abandonment. Some of them come from fur farms where they were being raised to be pelted. So we are a full-fledged animal rescue organization, and we rescue wolves and we rescue wolf dogs, which, to answer your questions, are wolves with a certain degree of dog content. And that's a whole spectrum, the animals that are very doggy and animals that are very wolfy within that spectrum. So once the animals come to live with us, we heal them and rehabilitate them physically, emotionally, mentally, energetically. And they become ambassadors in the human world for this wolf message. So we do all these healing programs for some of the most needed people in our society, youth in foster care, youth in prison camps, and in juvenile delinquent facilities, in drug rehabilitation programs, gang members, people in prison for life. We do some programs with veterans as well. So that's the general context. The conversation that you and I are having at a more esoteric, energetic level is really never mentioned in the forefront of our therapeutic programs. I mean, it's a nonprofit organization working with government funding and grants and so on. So the conversation is more scientific and evidence-based. To answer your previous question, I never put it away that my purpose is to transmit the wolf message. I have pledged my life to the raising of consciousness many years ago and to the service of the next generation. The wolf is a great ally and helper to that quest, or maybe I'm the wolf helper. That could be another way to see it. And the wolf in particular, because it's the only animal that we have such a deep relationship with, energetically speaking. We've been, like I said earlier, possibly running with wolves for hundreds of thousands of years, and has allowed us to establish a connection with the natural world and that is unprecedented in our relationship with nature. And so the wolf has helped humanity move forward and learn and grow throughout the last tens of thousands of years, and I believe it can help us again.
This is such a fascinating topic. Teo, can you share with us, in your experience, because you have the sanctuary, the Wolf Connection, you've been working with, rehabilitating, and therapeutically working with wolves, what is the consciousness of wolves? What are they? Who are they? And why are they so important for us?
So the wolf the wolves, according to what the wolves has transmitted or the way I understood it, the wolves are heart energy. The wolves are, are the animal conduit to the healing of the human heart. So I don't know if I need to say more, but I could if you want.
Please do, because I love that metaphor, the conduit of healing of the human heart. That's so profound.
It's profound, and it's much more than a metaphor. It's an energetic fact. So they mm-hmm. have done this for us before. So I'm not talking in mythological terms. I'm talking about also in scientific terms. Now, through the study of epigenetics, scientists are beginning to determine that, for example, 70,000 years ago, we almost got extinct, humanity. And there's a good chance we looked at wolves for guidance. We began migrating with them, hunting together, collaborating, assisting each other mm-hmm. through this very difficult time during the last ice age. And that has created a bond that is lasting to this day. So then on an energetic level, there's a higher consciousness called wolf that has been guiding humanity in many ways for a long, long time. And I believe reclaiming that ancient connection can be extremely beneficial for us at this point in time.
Oh, not only extremely beneficial, imperative, I would say, at this time.
Yeah.
You know, Teo, you talked about how through the wolf connection, your sanctuary, you're helping all of these wounded souls. You know, whether they're gang members or wayward youth or you know, wherever you go. Can you give us some stories? Can you share some examples of what has occurred when you have reconnected these wounded? You know, the people who've gone through extreme trauma, because I think everyone who winds up in some sort of, prison or homeless or detention centers or whatever have gone through immense trauma earlier in their life. Can you share some stories of healing that have occurred?
Yeah, absolutely. I share some of these stories in the book. There was a young man that came to us on his last chance, so to speak. He was placed in foster care at a young age. He came to us around, I think it was 16 years old, and he had. He moved from home to home to home, and he was abandoned by her parents, and really dire situation. He was at the time unable to self-regulate, and he had very aggressive and violent tendencies. And in foster care here in California, when youth are unable to regulate that way and then become a danger to themselves and others, they get placed in higher level of emplacements with higher levels of security, and some of them resemble prisons. You know, they are lockdown facilities with basically lockdown bedrooms, and that resemble cells. So this young man, his name was Michael. Is Michael? He was about to be placed in one of these facilities. He was not responding to any kind of treatment. He was attacking his caretakers. He was throwing things out the window and breaking computers, punching holes on the wall. I mean, he was a very out of control situation. So the foster care agency where he was sent him over to us with two guards to come and work with us. So he very quietly listened to the stories from the different wolves, and he immediately bonded with a wolf named Kira. Kira was really, really badly treated you know, she has some teeth missing because she was hit, you know, kicked around, and part of her ears missing. I mean, you know, you could tell that she went through a very, very rough life. And Michael identified with her immediately, with her story. And so they began a journey of bonding and mutual healing. And for Michael, he came to Wolf Connection on Tuesdays for a number of weeks. And Tuesday morning was the only day that he would get out of bed, make his bed, brush his teeth, comb his hair. It was the motivation to come and see Kira, help him self-regulate, help him cope, help him find order and routine in his life. After 2 or 3 weeks, he was a very inquisitive, young man, and he wanted to learn how to use tools. He wanted to learn how to build things. So I began teaching him how to use basic tools, a hammer and a pair of pliers and a screwdriver. And he started helping me fix the wolf houses and the fencing. And soon he began learning how to use some power tools. And eventually we started cutting some trails together. And so this young man with very violent tendencies, all of a sudden he's wielding a machete to cut a trail through the foresty area of the property. And his caretakers, you know, their eyes were, you know, wide and open and holding their breath because they did not trust him. But I did. I did trust him. And I did trust his bond with Kira. And he never, ever betrayed or my trust or misused any of those tools. Fast forward a couple of weeks, he ends up asking his caretakers to buy him a utility tool. So now you see this young man walking around the group home with a belt that has some screws and nails and a hammer and screwdriver and pliers, fixing the stuff that he previously broke and fixing a squeaky hinge and a leaking faucet, walking away from fights, self-regulating in his impulses, finding ways to talk about his emotions. So him and I remain in touch after he graduated from the program, and he began applying himself in school. By the time he graduated high school, a year and a half later too, he was the president of the student council. He was dating a young woman his age, and he was a gentleman to her. I mean, his whole life completely did a 360 based on his relationship with Kira. And these transformations, I mean, I've witnessed time and time again this wolf-human bond that is literally transformational.
And that's such a powerful story that, you know, it's something actually that defies our ability to comprehend, intellectually, put it that way. You know, there's something else that happens, and when we reconnect with the wildness in us and back to nature again, I'm kind of integrating that story you told because it's so profound. It's so transformational. It's, you know, incredible that this young man reconnected. I my language would probably be something like reconnecting with his soul that he was, you know, totally shattered from, and it healed him, brought him back to himself, to his true nature again.
Yeah, and the language you use, I think, is accurate. Reconnected with a piece of himself. I mean, if we look in, you know, Native American healing tradition, you would say that this young man found his, you know, reclaimed his spirit. His spirit has left him, and he was just a shell. I mean, like many humans in modern times, just a shell walking, you know, and talking head with no spirit behind it. And he was able to reclaim his spirit. He became alive again, alive and awake, and his eyes were shining, and his smile was beaming. And he still, of course, he dealt with he was moved around with other placements after he left Wolf Connection, and we continued in touch. But through all these placements, he was a different young man.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Tell us how you rehabilitate the wolves that have been emotionally and mentally abused.
Thank you for that question. It's with a lot of patience. Wolves are their personalities and their inclinations are as varied as humans. So there's no not given formula. There are two or three things that is good to do, but each animal needs different space, different type of connection, different type of approach. In general, we don't. So it's very different than working with any dogs. I mean, dogs, the way I like to put it, dogs see us as their master. So they're looking for approval, they're looking for connection, they're looking for a bond. Wolves see us as their peer. So it's about a relationship that is a lot more, that's not based on need or codependence. So that being said, you can't really make a wolf do anything. So it's about bonding. So we first spend a good amount of time just getting to know each other. So we find an enclosure in the facility that is really to their liking, and you know that when they really find, you know, it's a certain body language, a certain relaxation in their bodies and their tone and their breath that tell us that they're comfortable in that particular habitat that we assign them to. And then we began coming in and sitting around, sitting on a rock, waiting for them to come and get acquainted with the scent. So it takes time. And depending on what their experience is before coming to the ranch, we are looking at, in some cases, it's years of process and bonding and bringing food and then building a relationship before they're even part of a program. Once with the bonding, the relationship established, we begin, it's almost starting like an energetic conversation. You know, I do this and they do that. And then they realize that when I extend my hand, I'm not trying to grab them, but I'm just, offering, that's the way I connect. So they connect through sniffing and through their face. We connect with our hands, so they need to understand that. And that's really the beginning. From there, it can go in many different directions.
So it's a tremendous amount of patience on both sides, I would imagine, the wolf and the caregiver.
Great observation, because many times, you know, we think that we are the ones being trained, not them. You know, we are the ones being reawakened or reconnected with just a way of being that is not result or goal oriented. You know, we humans approach the animal, and in our mind, in our modern Western mind, you know, we do this to get that. We move this way to achieve certain results, and the wolves are just being. You know, we do this and something may happen or nothing happens. And it's a different way. It's a more natural, you were referring to our connectedness to nature. Nature is not result-oriented. It's just a state of being.
How do all the wolves get along together? Because that's a big pack you have there.
Yeah, it's a big pack. Like I said before, we are a full-fledged animal rescue facility. As such, we follow certain rules and regulations. The wolves, we have a number of enclosures, a number of habitats on the land, and most of the animals live in pairs. So we don't have 30 animals living on top of each other. The reason is, you know, wolves in the wild are typically a family. It's mom and dad with two or three litters of pups. So if you see a pack of 12 or 15 wolves, most of them are blood related, and they usually one or two that come from other packs, but it's a very ritualistic integration that they follow. Mm-hmm. Here at the ranch, we get wool from all over the country. Most of them come to us as adults. They come to us with their personalities already formed, with their own neuroses around resources, around food, water, and space, their own rivalry with other males or females. So keeping them in pairs is the best way to keep them healthy and balanced.
Well, so they all have their separate living areas.
Correct. Yeah.
So can you?
And then they do interact with each
about...
other. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, they do interact with each other often because you know part of their behavioral training is that we constantly walk them on leash. So we hike the property and the mountains around the land constantly several times a week with the wolves, and they go out in groups and they hike next to each other, and they you know mark the same bushes and so on. So there is an interaction and enrichment that they constantly experience. It's just that the living quarters is you know the way I described before in pairs.
Okay, so that's great. So you know we understand more about how those wolves are living there. And tell us more about the wolf connection. Okay, tell us more about what happens there. Can people come and visit you? How do you how do you work therapeutically? People come to you. Do you go out? Let us understand more about this amazing sanctuary that you've created.
Of course, thank you. So we used to go out more. We used to visit residential treatment facilities and schools. We find that the work and interaction with the wolves is a lot more powerful and impactful at the ranch. So now we encourage all our program clients to come to us. So to answer your question, during the fall and the spring, we follow the school year. So in the fall and the spring, we have groups of teens and young adults coming literally every day from Monday through Friday. Over the weekends, we open to some community events, and the general public can come and do a hike with the wolves or a visit. And then we have, since I believe the wolf has a message for all of us, not only for the most underserved groups in our society, we have opened our doors now to corporate team building and leadership training. So it's a way for us to influence people that whose decisions have great impact in society. So it's constantly, groups going through the ranch. We have a partnership with Airbnb, the booking service, where we are, the number one experience in Los Angeles. And people don't come to stay at the ranch, but we are, a premier experience for that community as well.
So you really have moved into many channels for allowing experiences for people of all different walks of life to come and be able to connect with the wolves.
Correct.
What happens when you bring the corporate people in, when you have the team building and you bring people from that world into your world? What has happened to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was a journey for us to discover really what these groups really need. And so initially, what I did was I created a very deep and elaborate spiritual initiation process. And to my surprise, it did not work. It did not work. Mm-hmm. It was not something that it was, the feedback we got, it felt imposed, it felt different things. So then I realized maybe we could just go to the basics. And so we develop a program during which, you know, they come for a day visit, and any interaction with the wolves or interaction among humans or Q&A that takes place is all filtered through the polarity of mind versus heart. We serve some of the most famous tech companies in the space, and these are people that are constantly sitting in front of a computer writing code, writing, you know, so it's very heady. So we realize that, for example, to give you an example, you know, they come and, you know, they start experiencing the wolves, and I find that when it gets, you know, the experience is deepening and it begins touching their heart, there's a tendency to jump to the head to ask a question and, in a way, divert the heart open energy. So, you know, in the middle of an interaction, they will go, well, what do they eat? Right? A totally, you know, heady question. So now my team is trained to answer that with another question and say, well, is that question from your mind or from your heart? Mm-hmm. And then they would pause and would go, oh, I think from my mind, never mind. And we found that that kind of reinforcement of helping create a distinction between what comes from my mind and from my head to what impulses come from my heart has been very helpful to them.
Have you seen a transformation in that culture from people who have been touched by their wolf connection?
Most definitely. There's a couple of big corporations that have been bringing their leadership teams now for a couple of years. And what they report is that it has become a cultural conversation within the company. I think some of the wolf principles and simple lessons that we teach and the heart versus mind conversation has become, you know, they put little post-its on their computers and they have a little wolf statue on their computer and to remind them of that conversation. And of course, I mean, these kinds of things, you know, at big companies, at corporate level, it's a slow process. So I believe in the power of the transmission, in the power of the consciousness. So we're planting these seeds with the trust that they will germinate at the right time.
And does this occur from just one visit with you, or do people from organizations, companies, have more than one visit?
Well, the couple of corporations I'm referring to have been bringing their teams almost on a weekly basis. Hmm. So in some cases, are new teams, and some and the employees that choose to return have the ability to return two or three times within a certain period of time. So we have created an ongoing program with them. Some of them, you know, they come for one time, and we do the best we can. You know how it goes. I mean, you know, you work with what you have sometimes.
And I'm sure the more people have access to that whole, I mean, it's a healing from the wolves. But you have such a strong intention for that experience, for your sanctuary, and I'm sure everyone who's working with you are aligned with that intention. So to me, it just seems like when you walk into your space, transformation happens.
Beautifully said, because this is something that many people experience and express, and we never advertise it or announce it, but many you can see it in their bodies. They just walk into, you know, get into the land, park their cars, and they walk out. And all of a sudden, there's a lot of exhale. You know, it's a deep breath already taking place just by getting out of their cars, and they haven't met the wolves yet. And you see comments like, "Wow, this feels great," you know. Many people cannot put their finger on it the way you just did, but the the energy on the land is palpable.
Yeah, I would imagine so. You know, for me, you know, my journey over the last few years is understanding the tremendous healing power when we reconnect with nature. So it is, you know, for me, I've gone down to Costa Rica. I've worked with plant medicine. I am in a program now that I've, you know, my own little daily discipline. I get up, I watch the sunrise every morning, reconnect on that level. And from those experiences, it has really shown me that it's through that connection with nature that we really get healed and that we realize we are part of the web of life, which we have totally disconnected ourselves because we spend 95% of our life indoors now. You know, we really don't have much access, generally speaking. I mean, there are people who are out there surfing and, you know, hiking. But generally speaking, as a culture, we have lost our connection. And it needs to be reestablished again because we've lost ourselves. We've lost that connection to our soul when we disconnect from nature. Do you have some thoughts about that?
Well, you said it beautifully. And the fact that, you know, thank God we have people like you as passing around that message and reinforcing it and transmitting it constantly because it's much needed. The mere principle of having to, you know, get to nature to reconnect with it is such a very interesting one because you know, nature is in our hearts. We are a natural organism, and this fantasy or this fog that we are, nature is outside of us is very, very fascinating to me. So you know, your show is about love. I think everything comes down to that. And love, you know, obviously love has many different interpretations, but I refer to love as a frequency, as a state of being, as a certain consciousness level that really opens up, and you know, our natural origins in inside of us. And from there, because I mean, you know, I live in nature. I live in a ranch, and I've had experiences of being in groups that we go for a hike with the wolves. They may very well be at a mall because the way they're behaving, walking through a nature with a creek and a forest with wolves, the experience became so foreign that now, you know, they're socializing and they're talking to each other and chatting and getting loud and making jokes. You know, the wolves disappear from the conscience. I've been observing that that phenomenon very carefully too.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. So tell us about your book. So your new book is The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human.
Yeah, so thank you for that. I aspire to transmit a little bit of my life story and then the story and the philosophy behind the therapeutic method that we have developed at the ranch. And then I aim to present to readers a holistic view of the wolf the way I see it. A lot of people, you know, most people, you know, they hear the word wolf and they will think about the animal chasing deer and elk in the wild, which, you know, is accurate, but that's only in the way I experience it, that only one aspect of the wolf. So I divided the book in nine realms or nine areas of philosophical and intellectual and energetic ways to refer to the wolf. So one is the wild wolf, which is the one in nature, but then I talk about the mythological wolf, you know, I talk about the ritualistic wolf, which is, you know, how early cultures have receive the wolf message and the wolf energy and funnel it into the way of living through rituals of initiation, creation stories, mythology, and so on. So I wanted to really bring context to the reader to help them understand why wolf creates such a reaction to most people. We either love them passionately or abhor them, you know, with equal intensity. It's not many animals awaken that kind of passion or rejection from people. And by the way I believe that is, it is a chapter on the book called The Human Wolf, and the purpose of that chapter is to make only one point, which is the wolf is a reflection of us. It's our most clear mirror in nature. So they will reflect what is in our heart. If we see the wolf and we see altruism and loyalty and devotion to their packs and their families and bringing balance to the ecosystem, then again, it's a reflection of our hearts. When some people see the wolf and they see a vicious, you know, bloodthirsty predator that never has enough, that is always consuming and taking away, well, that's what we're carrying.
It's a reflection. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we have the reintroduction of wolves back into nature, and now I think I read something where they're thinking of culling them again. Is that what's going on, and do people bring you in to consult with the how to relate with wolves in nature?
So wolves, at least here in the United States, they have become almost like a political issue, you know, only second to healthcare and abortion and social security and gun control. They became a political issue, and no other animal has been that. So when, you know, one party comes to power, they protect them. The next one guy, starts wolf hunting, and the next guy then protects them again. Keeps going back and forth. Wolf has so much attention because of what I mentioned earlier. They are such a reflection for who we are. So there's a constant back and forth, and no one can really get to agree on what a healthy wolf population looks like, and so on. Mindless. That every time, you know, humans believe that we can come and fix nature and, you know, control the ecosystem and control the animal population and then plant trees or deforestation. I mean, every time we come and we try to manage and regulate nature, we have screwed it up every time. I mean, there hasn't been an instance in our history where we came in, tried to fix nature, and we succeeded. But, you know, that's the dysfunction of humanity. You asked me also if I ever came in. Only in California, I spoke at the hearings for wolf protection here in California, and we succeeded. In California, wolves are protected. There are not too many wolves. There's only a few in Northern California, but they're coming in from Oregon and Washington State. So luckily, they have a sanctuary in this state. It's not in the states where the majority of the wolves in this country, they don't enjoy the type of protection that we have in California. So it's a constant back and forth.
Well, thank you for the wonderful work you're doing on behalf of the wolves in California, and I'm sure your influence will go far beyond that in the years ahead. And really spreading this important message. So my last question before we come to the end of the show, Teo, is there a way that people can support your work at your sanctuary, the Wolf Connection?
Well, thank you for asking that. So Wolf Connection is a nonprofit organization. We exist thanks to the generosity and hearts of supporters, people that care, people that get involved by volunteering, by making a donation, by referring schools or companies to come work with us. So anybody that feels called to find out more, you know, the website is wolfconnection.org, and there are many ways there to get involved.
Oh, that's wonderful. So people can go to wolfconnection.org to get more information. And also, I really recommend everyone listening pick up a copy of The Wolf Connection, What Wolves Can Teach Us About Being Human, by my guest today, Teo Alfredo. Teo, it's been such a pleasure, such a delight, such an honor to have you on the show. You are such an inspiration and making such a difference in the world. So glad you had this time with us today.
Sure, the pleasure has been all mine. I loved your questions. And the way you've been grasping I don't have this experience very often, the way you've been grasping the reality of the wolves and what's happening at the ranch was very refreshing. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. So to all of you listening, thank you for joining this wonderful conversation about the wolf. Pick up a copy of The Wolf Connection. Go to wolfconnection.org, support the work of the wolves and of what Teo is doing there. It's a unique and profound experience, and maybe go over and have a visit yourself when you are in north of L.A. So to all of you listening, thank you for joining me on this Love Code journey, and remember to fill your week with love, peace, and harmony. Bye for now.